It's got nothing to do with John Woo, though, has it? Like, it's like, it's his first mobile game that he's put his name to. Like, it's got nothing to do with it.
The game is entirely based around his style. It's got a f***ing dove in it and everything.
It's got a f***ing dove in it? So has my bar of f***ing soap.
And welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 260. I'm your host, James Gilmore. I'm joined by Peter Wellington.
Hi.
And Keith Andrew.
Hello.
And we're here to talk about the new Ninja Turtles movie poster. So what does it look like, guys? What do you think? Hey?
My good lord.
Horrible. That is horrible.
They've got like lips, like people lips.
So they're making them dress up in these black things with camera thingies all over them, so they can then, what, map over what we're looking at in this poster.
Yeah, they're completely CGI. They're not like the old Ninja Turtles movie from 91 where there are dudes in suits and Jim Henson's behind the scenes controlling it all. It's fully CGI, but the poster's got leaked, and this is the first look we've had at the actual CGI they're going to be.
Oh my god, Donatello's a nerd.
Can I also say that? That is a horrible logo as well. It's horrible. I don't like that logo.
I can't see anything that isn't horrible about it, actually. I look at the sunglasses. What?
Raphael is cool but rude. And it looks like he will be.
It looks like he's a sociopath. It looks like he's properly psychotic. And also his red little eye band thing looks kind of like pinky purple.
Yeah, it looks pink.
Like more like I thought it was Donatello at first until I saw him at the top with his nerd glasses, like you say, because he's a nerd, isn't he? Because he does technology.
Michelangelo, it looks like he's pulling a duck face.
Oh, it's because they've got lips. They've got people lips, man. Like, and it's so weird. It looks really wrong. It looks like they're all pouting or something, but they're not.
The people in this movie, are they in any way famous? Because they need not be.
I don't know.
If
actually,
you see what I mean, they could choose four randoms, couldn't they?
Yeah. Hopefully, they've just chosen like physical actors.
I am not buying into these mutated turtles being martial artists whatsoever.
But they're not mutated turtles, are they? They're aliens.
What?
Have you not heard this? At least the last thing I heard was that the whole thing's been retconned, and they're not actual turtles that were dropped into the sewer and had ooze that. They're aliens from space.
Right. I'm annoyed. Why would you start the episode out making me annoyed like this?
I don't know. I thought it'd be a different way to start podcast about mobile gaming.
Let's be honest. This is for children, isn't it?
It doesn't look like it is, though. Look how brash and bullish they are.
It looks scary for kids. Yeah. I'm slightly intimidated by these mutant turtles.
I don't know. It looks like a cereal box to me. It just looks rubbish. It looks naff. It looks horrible. I don't want to think about it anymore.
This looks like the kind of nostalgia-tweaking awfulness that the onesie-wearing generation below us will absolutely lap up and go, yeah, I remember the Turtles. No, you don't remember the Turtles. You remember Turtles...
Like Generation 3 cartoons.
Yeah. You don't remember the real Turtles when it meant something. Oh.
Are you saying you don't wear a onesie?
No, I don't. And also, the exciting thing is the child who lives next door just came to the window again.
Say hello. Regular listeners will know that this child has become a feature of the podcast since last week.
Should we get him on the show and see whether or not he's interested in turtles?
I think technically that's classified as grooming.
Yeah, this is getting a bit strange. Especially the things I talk about.
I'd steer it a little bit clear.
Well, just for insight on whether or not the Hero Turtles are indeed a thing that children nowadays are interested in. Because I don't think this poster looks anything like a thing.
They're not the Hero Turtles either. It's not called the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. It's just called Ninja Turtles.
I'm not happy about this.
So welcome to the podcast about mobile video games. So the Room 2 has gone universal, finally. And to celebrate this fact, Fireproof Games, creator of the touch-based puzzle series, has made the Room 2 a bit cheaper. We don't know how long for, but at the moment it's gone down from £2.99 or $4.99 to £1.99 or $2.99. So it's a limited time thing, but we really, really liked it. I really liked it anyway, and I'm speaking for the site as a whole when I say that. I don't care if you've played it or not. We really liked it. It was really good. And you should totally get it. But don't get it if you have anything less than an iPhone 4S, because it's not going to run. Unfortunately, because it's quite kind of graphically intensive stuff, and if you do it on an iPhone 3, then it's just going to explode in your face. So don't do that. But do get it if you have it on anything else, because it really is quite the thing. We like it very much. Also, Clash of Clans has been updated again. Yeah, that's all
cool.
I got.
What new amazing things?
Oh, plus five something and two extra thingies and that. I don't know. Okay, the Barbarian King can use an iron fist to make himself and anybody nearby barbarians enrage for a bit. The Archer Queen can use a royal cloak. There are now level 6 minions, a level 5 freeze spell, and a 5 times boost recovery when heroes are sleeping.
Oh, thank God.
That's all I'm going to read.
Thank God.
Do you know, the longer that game goes on, the more impenetrable it becomes. I really enjoyed my time with Clash of Clans, but I don't think I could get back into it now.
No,
it's like starting up World of Warcraft for the first time ever.
Yeah, it is massively sort of like, intimidating
bing,
at this
bing,
point.
Bing, bing.
Like, and you know that the fan base is so kind of entrenched and advanced at this point that as soon as someone rocks up to your barriers or anything, then you'll get your entire village army place smashed down. See, this is how little I know about Clash of Clans. Village army places. I know you build stuff and then occasionally people come and try and knock it down with archers or whatever. So yeah, that's been updated. Hurrah! Something I do know a bit more about: Dead Trigger 2 has also been updated. This time with European environments. The whole Dead Trigger 2 thing was that they released it with a bunch of American environments, and you played through that for about a month or two, and then they promised to add additional areas around the world every month or so. And they've done that. So I think there was an Eastern environment. I think there was a Japanese area. There was an African area as well. And now we've got new European content. Why is that funny?
It sounds very generic. They've done what does? Europe. Oh, yes, Europe. I know what Europe looks like, yes.
So apparently what you've got is forests, city streets, and warehouses. Something.
That is Europe.
All of things. All things that are in and around Europe.
I've been to Europe, and it is literally nothing but that.
Yeah, I can't move for trees and forests.
Sometimes you get a warehouse in the forest as well, and you think, God, I am in Europe.
God, how European is this? Do you remember back in the PS2 days when Japanese companies were trying to be a little bit more Western and were making representations of Europe, when like they would try and make games set in European countries? I don't know if you've ever played games like for example, there's a game set in Aberystwyth. Small Welsh student town.
Really?
Yeah, there is. And like, it's set like 100 years previously, so okay, fair enough. But there's a gigantic castle in the game, and like, it's a huge part of this, huge part of the title, like this massive castle, and it's like Aberystwyth, 1824, or whatever it is. There is no castle like that in Aberystwyth.
Yes, there is, Peter. We've all got castles in Europe.
I prefer when we put giant enemy crabs in Japanese settings.
I agree. Actually, my favourite Japanese interpretation of a Western environment was in, I think it's Silent Hill 2 they do it. It might be Silent Hill 1, actually. Mm. I can't remember which. But if you go and look at the environments in Silent Hill, I think it might be 2. They've used Kindergarten Cop, the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, to design the school.
Yeah, it's the original. Yeah. It's there's a whole website dedicated
there
to
is.
It.
There is. And you think, like, no. And you see a picture and it's got, like, a poster that appears in the game, and then it shows the still from Kindergarten Cop. And you're like, oh, that's a coincidence. And then it shows the school bus from the right angle, and then it shows the correlating thing in the game. You're like, huh. And it just keeps going down, all the way down the page. They've literally just used that as a reference tool. So the school in there is the school from Kindergarten Cop. So there you go. It's basically an Arnold Schwarzenegger child-rearing sim.
There's a PC version, I think, isn't there? So let's just say that should be modded.
Yes, the freaky Kindergarten Cop, in which the school nurse has no face and tries to kill your children.
Yeah.
Anyway, Dead Trigger 2, you can get also weapons that are new as well. You get something called the FN-2000, don't know what that is, the Spaggin. Literally, it's written Spaggin, S-P-A-G-I-N.
Keith, have you had a Spaggin recently?
Not during this podcast.
No, okay, good.
No, I saved for the weekends. And a minigun, which I know what that is, a minigun. There you are.
Do you not know what an FN-2000 is?
It's two letters followed by several numbers.
Yeah, it is a genuine weapon, which I actually found out about because of some glue shooty game.
Oh.
It's a combination between a pistol and a machine gun in that it's like short form, but it's long range. So it'll shoot long distances, but you can move it about quite freely. And it was, I believe it was created like specifically for NATO so that people could get in and out of helicopters and planes quickly without like butting the front of the rifle against things. I found all of this stuff out simply because I played Contract Killer Zombies 2.
I want you to know that during that entire explanation, I was touching myself.
Well, hopefully your weapon.
Oh,
didn't...
yes. I was giving it a right good spagging.
Yay!
Quick news update before we get into the real meat of the week's occurrences. Revolution has submitted Broken Sword, The Serpent's Curse to Apple for approval. You talked about this a little while back, Keith, that you'd been playing it on your Vita.
Yeah, I haven't played it for the last week, actually, because I had I put my back out. But,
You did. I haven't spoken to you since all that happened, actually.
Last time you saw me, I had a bucket of ice sat behind me very awkwardly in a hotel foyer. Yeah,
you did, because you were having spasms.
I was having spasms. That was good. I ended up peeing in a bucket.
That was really sad, because we rarely get to meet up, listeners. We're all in different places all over the country, and these conferences and events are the first times during the year where we get to say, oh, hello, you're a real person. I occasionally forget this because you're just basically a small JPEG on my screen most of the time that flashes when I talk into Skype. So it's really nice to see the other guys and hang out. Unfortunately, you went for the first like half of the day at the conference and then you woke up having, I don't know what, like slept upside down, dangling from the ceiling.
I got up to go to the loo. I don't know if anyone is going to be interested in this whatsoever. I got up to go to the loo.
I am fascinated.
At 4 a.m, having had two nights of non-sleep for various different reasons, not anything rude. I was just walking back from the toilet and bang, it went. And I thought, it's 4 a.m, and the worst thing you can do, actually, if you do that, is to go to bed. You got to keep moving. But it was 4 a.m, and we had to be up at, like, 6:30, supposedly to go and set up our very own conference. And I thought, I haven't had any sleep. I really need to go to sleep. And I thought, oh, it'll be all right. I'll just keep moving around in bed. But no, it wasn't. And by the time I got in the morning, I couldn't really walk to the bathroom. And I thought, no, this is not good. And yeah, it got worse and worse and worse. And then I spent the whole of the day in one chair, unable to move or sit still until I was rescued. And I missed the whole second day. Yeah, it was great. And also didn't play any video games.
Well, hopefully, even if you don't have a Vita, if you happen to have an iOS device, you should be able to play it pretty soon. They submitted it for approval to the App Store, which means that usually about a week, maybe 2 weeks, it can take a bit longer, depending on if they stumble across any issues, legal or otherwise, but it should be up pretty soon. Interestingly, the review that we put up for the Vita version wasn't that glowing, really.
Who wrote it?
I'm not actually sure.
Mark.
Oh, was it Mark? Yeah. Apparently, some of the puzzles a bit lame, slow progress, plot not so good, jokes.
He's like the biggest fan of that series.
He loves
bad. I don't believe the bad joke. I mean, I'm only just into bad jokes. I don't see that happening.
Well, we'll be able to find out for ourselves very soon on iOS. We'll obviously give you a heads up when it does go live on the App Store, but keep your eyes out for it in the meantime. Now then, big old news. Mark, editor Mark, went to an event today, a secret event that was so secret that nearly everybody knew what it was about. As with all the best secret events, everyone was talking about it about 24 hours beforehand. And it just confirmed what we already knew. And that thing was that Sony is going to be releasing a PS Vita Slim in Europe next week.
Wow.
Wow, yes, the redesign that we were all crying out for, everyone with a Vita, you, P, Peter, and that other guy.
Yep, all two of us.
Yep, amazing. Don't discount the other guy.
I'm that other guy.
He loves that. He loves that little big planet. No, there's an extra guy. It's not just two people, because that's ludicrous. I can't sustain an entire mobile-based gaming
but
economy.
Three of us.
Yeah, between the three of you, you're keeping Sony afloat. Right, so what are the differences, says Rhetorical Question Man. Well, it's going to be called the PS Vita Slim, much like the PSP Slim. This is just the same kind of step down. It is not a massive visual change. It does look very, very, very similar. You'll notice some subtle changes, like the start and select buttons in the bottom. They used to be an oval shape on the old one. Now they're circular. They used to be a little kind of indent. Seriously, these are the things they've changed. It's like so these tiny little cosmetic.
That's why it wasn't selling.
I know. They nailed it. They focus grouped this thing and they were like, no, get rid of that. People hate ovals. Ovals look like eyes and I hate looking at people's eyes. Whereas circular things, they look brilliant because they look like the...
testicles.
Exactly. I didn't want to go there, but I'm glad you did. Thank you. So they've got circular start select buttons. There used to be this little indent groove which would kind of link the right analog stick to the set of face buttons, the four face buttons. Now they're entirely separate. The fact that I'm pointing out these tiny changes shows you how kind of minimal the design is. It looks a bit more, I don't know, is it more matte or more shiny? I can't really tell. I think it looks a bit more matte.
It's more matte, and there's less sort of chrome around the edges.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's slimmer and lighter. And
yes, so what you got is 20% thinner, to be precise, than the original Vita, and it's 15% lighter. From a tech point of view, obviously the same stuff is inside it. What you do get extra is another gigabyte of internal storage memory. I should say, not another, but any internal storage memory.
Yeah.
They had a little tiny bit of flash in the original one, didn't they? For like BIOS stuff or something?
Yeah.
I think. But yeah, we had nothing before. So you've got a whole gigabyte in there, which will let you store 1/3 of a game or something. Yay, the Vita. And you get an extra hour of battery life.
The battery is amazing anyway. That battery never runs down.
No. Is it because you never play
that is true. But even when I play it, you think, I could power the world with this, and it just wouldn't even affect it.
Yes, which you would think would be impressive because of that lovely OLED screen that the first model PSP runs on, which has been obviously brought back into the... Oh, no, wait, it totally hasn't. They've made the screen worse.
Yeah. You should quantify worse.
Worse means not as good as before.
Sure, but worse is a strong word. Like it's not quite as good as an OLED screen. Like it's not terrible, is it? You don't look at it and go, oh. It's just not as good as an OLED screen.
Well, yeah, but whenever like an upgraded model takes a step backwards in an area, you kind of go, oh, that's but why would I? Why would I then?
No,
because
so the thing is, like, everybody's as is the want of the internet. Everybody seems to be, and I'm sure we're not, but everybody seems to be like either like this is amazing, or like this is a stupid idea, and like actually, it's a bit of both. Like, it feels like. Do you know what I mean?
We'll have no moderation on this podcast, Willington.
Like, there's some balance to be had here. Like,
no, there isn't.
It's a nice...
There's only a fence, and then there's me on one side of it.
No,
and everyone else who's wrong on the other
side. There's a nice visual... Like, visually, it looks better than the first one. I feel I think it's a better aesthetic. It's slimmer, it's lighter, which is obviously nicer.
Just looks a bit rounder to me.
It looks a bit rounder. It's matte. It looks a bit more quality in that way. Yeah, the screen's not as good, and you wonder why they've taken it out. And that seems like a backward step.
It's cost, clearly, isn't it?
Probably cost. And it is odd that they are making it more expensive than the previous model, which you can get one for like 140 quid now, a Vita.
Yeah.
Which is
new.
A bargain.
Yeah, considering what it is, I guess. I mean, for the hardware. You know.
It's brilliant. Like, it's a really good device, and there's some amazing games on it. If you've got a PS4 or PS3 and you've got PS Plus, then you may as well get one because you've basically got a massive library of Vita games already as well. But, like, this edition is, like...
It's going to launch at about 180 quid.
It's a bit more expensive for something that looks a bit better but isn't quite as good technically. The furore that people were sort of like experiencing on Twitter and Facebook today was just like, oh, calm down, everyone.
Wasn't there rumors that we're going to do a bundle with PS4? I think that would make sense.
They've done one of those already, yeah.
It should be just dropped in there. It should be an obligatory thing and just get a massive install base, and then over the lifespan of the Vita, sorry, of the PS4, you know, all that dual screen stuff and extra games that I'm sure you can have on your PSN that will work on both devices, and that would make sense.
Yeah, you know, like I say, I love my Vita, and I think it's a really, I think it's more than a requirement if you're like a serious, and I mean like serious gamer, as in like if you're actually like totally up for console-based stuff on the go. Like, I really do think it's a proper serious investment.
What if you're quite poor though?
Well, if you're poor, then I don't want to know. No, but
then
I mean,
screw like, you. And yeah, well, to be fair, everyone here listening probably has an iPhone, so they're probably
well, exactly.
Poor.
I mean, but yeah, I mean, if you are looking for a bargain though, like, here's my top tip. Because Sony will want to phase these out, because, you know, why on earth would you want to make two designs at the same time? They'll heavily discount the original version. So
no, they won't. They've already said they're not going to do that. They've said that the stock is incredibly limited of the original ones. There's going to be hardly any left, and there's going to be no price cut whatsoever for the original model, which are now going to fly off the shelves.
I don't believe because, that for a second.
Because it's a superior machine. I know, yeah. I know. That's because they made four and they sold the three. So
I was going to say I don't think that's quite true. I think they expected the Vita to do a lot better than it has done so far.
I don't know. I don't reckon there are warehouses stocked to the brim of past model PS Vitas. I reckon they made a first wave or two, and then realized it wasn't selling. And then they spent, when it came to reordering more, they went, you know what? Hold off for a bit. Because it's been out for how long now? Like 2 years or something?
Yeah, just coming up in 2 years, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I doubt they were renewing massive orders like 6 months ago.
No.
So I reckon they were just draining the original stock. And they've obviously been making this for the past, you know, year and a half, 2 years or something.
Yeah.
Since the original one was launched. So, you know, obviously they're going to say they haven't got much stock, but I don't reckon they're going to price cut the original. In fact, I think it's going to be more expensive to get the original because people will want it more.
I made a prediction in an article on Pocket Gamer last week, and I reckon that this year the Vita will come down to £120. And I reckon this is all part of that plan.
Well, the PSP came down to £120, didn't it? I don't know what the cost is, actually.
Well, yeah, it won't cost a lot, but it'll cost a lot, and they won't be making a lot of profit, I should say. But considering they're taking out this OLED screen, which seems to be like, you know, a cost saving measure,
I don't know. Maybe they should just suck it up and sell it at cost, and then just reap the benefits of whatever the PS4. I mean, actually, I don't know if they're selling the PS4 at cost because it is considerably cheaper than the Xbox. But considering that the uptake has been so strong,
but they're both the analysis consoles suggested they're both basically about level. They might both be making very, very slight profits, which is quite strange.
Yeah,
because usually Sony and Microsoft sell their consoles at a loss.
Yes, indeed. And then they make all the money back later with software and whatnot. Mm. But yeah, that's impressive if they are making this. I think they should, with the Vita, if they really, really, really want to get some penetration on it and have it be a supporting item, an accessory that goes with the PS4 that every PS4 owner should have, they should sell it for £120, suck it up, and then, I guess, make a show of the games which will use both devices if they're really taking it seriously. Otherwise, it's still in that price zone where it's just that bit beyond where people are going, it's a bit too much of a luxury item, and I'd rather have a DS and have all that library of games instead of buy this and have 10 games that are worth playing.
This is all part of a sort of future strategy. I mean, Unity's just come to Vita, right? And with Unity will come cheaper games because indies do it. You know, indies create titles on that using that engine. And obviously, indie games aren't your 30 or 40 quid highly desirable PSP era handheld gaming. Mm. They are your, you know, they are your Thomas Was Alones and your Braids and Flowers and all that sort of stuff. So there is this move at the moment towards making it more accessible and cheaper. And the fact that it works as a second screen for your PS4 and the fact that you can stream PS4 games through it, which is really neat.
And presumably when PlayStation Now goes properly global, then it'll be linked into that as
and
well.
It'll be on that.
So you can stream directly, presumably from a server with that, or from your PS4.
I really think that I genuinely do feel like Sony is going to push hard on in 2014 to get this in more and more people's homes.
Well, they got to drop that price tag. Or, you know.
Yeah. No, they really do. Because £180 for that device, I think no. But, I mean, for $140, $150 for that sort of device, absolutely, bargain.
Well, it'll be launching with an Indie Games Mega Pack, which will give you 10 games, including the aforementioned Thomas Was Alone, Hotline Miami, which is that PC violent one that was good. Not as good on Vita, but good nonetheless. Limbo, which we've all played by now, presumably, and Velocity Ultra. And you get a 4GB memory card as well, and the whole pack will cost about £20, which is actually quite good, considering how expensive the memory cards are on their own. Another huge stumbling point for the Vita. That's those stupid proprietary memory cards. When will Sony learn about that? Apparently never, because the mini disc was such a massive success. Actually, I wonder, because I had a mini disc player.
Me too.
But I had it because I do music and stuff, so it was good. It was one of those portable digital recorders.
I had it because I make poor purchasing decisions.
Fabulous. Well, I still got a PSP rattling around. I think I got a couple actually rattling around somewhere with those little UMD discs.
Oh, so good.
Yeah, they were huge as well. UMD. Buy movies you already own for twice the price. Yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
on a tiny little screen and a rattly little disc. Amazing. So yes, PSV should be appearing in stores next week. You can pre-order them right now, I'm going to say. I think they said that started today, so definitely by the time you hear this. So you can go and add to the number. There can be 5, maybe 6 people who own a Vita. Be one of those people. So that was the Sony news.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's not really much to say about this because it's such a kind of nothing. It's an ephemera of a story. It's just like floating around, insubstantial. I try and reach out and grab it, and nothing. I come back with smoke. But Nintendo might be doing stuff with its licenses on mobile, but not really. Maybe they could be, though, because but not the actual games, but you know, there might be a thing that they do with a screen that's a mobile screen, and it's, yeah,
this story is really, really simple. It's called, we're going to make a companion app for the next Mario game. Story over. That is what they will do. Like, there's talk about them doing like demos of full games to run on mobiles and so forth. Like,
to show off the capabilities of the touch screen that exists, yeah, on the touchpad, sorry.
Yeah.
Not screen. On the, you know, Wii U controller.
But that doesn't make any sense because you have to use, you know, like using a finger on the Wii U gamepad is like the worst. Like, it's the worst experience. You have to, you know, you have to use a stylus, really. So it doesn't make sense to do it on that. And you don't get any sense of the tactility of buttons that you would use to actually move. No, it's absolute rubbish. Like, this is Nintendo saying, yeah, we'll make a companion app. What they'll do is they'll make a Pokedex. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's that simple. It'll be Pokemon Bank. You can manage all of your stuff, you know, online. It'll be the next, I don't know, Pikmin. You'll be able to use it as a third screen. I don't know. Like,
well, but this is the first step, public step, or even slight concession towards mobile that they've made, because we've still got quotes from, I don't know, 2011 with Iwata saying, "Not in my lifetime, you bastards." Well, Nintendo will never go anywhere near mobile, not while I'm bloody... Yeah, I'm paraphrasing, obviously.
It's funny, but... isn't it? Like,
I read a dodgy translation, perhaps.
Japanese businessmen tend to be quite aggressive.
They do. Bit Larry, while they're wearing a Luigi hat, swearing at the boardroom.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how they roll.
Yeah.
But no, you know, 2-3 years ago, they're saying, not a chance, I'll go nowhere near mobile. Nintendo is all about our Nintendo hardware and our thing, and that's it. Now it's like, well, we might do a thing on mobile, but not a real thing.
This news and the muddled nature in which it's kind of been delivered, it's perfect evidence of why they haven't done mobile, because they don't get it. Because so, like, there was a rush a couple of years ago of companion apps and people doing companion apps. And what all these people learned about companion apps is that they're a bit pointless at the moment, because they're a little mini marketing tool, but they don't really have any great effect on sales of anything. So investors have been calling out for Nintendo to do something on mobile, not to help Wii U sales, but just to do something on mobile to make some money, because everyone knows the Wii U is dead. So you can do what, you know, having a companion app for a Mario game on 3DS or Wii U is going to do poo all, because, yeah, anyone who owns those games might think, oh, I've got an iPhone, I'll download this companion app, but it doesn't work the other way. You're not going to people who don't own a Wii U or a 3DS downloading a companion app and thinking, right, okay, I'm going to go drop a few hundred quid on something now because I've got this companion app. So it's this complete muddle of nonsense. They probably think this is satisfying some kind of investor urge, that they're kind of addressing that now, but they haven't. It's just nonsense.
Do you think that maybe this is them being able to go, look, we did this on mobile and no one wanted
it. Well, yeah, that might prove to be the case, but, you know,
it's a kind of half concession.
They'll be
it?
Saying that, yeah, while they're digging their own grave, because they're just getting... I genuinely, I know there's a lot of nonsense talked about Nintendo, and they do have a massive cash reserve, but they are stumbling into trouble. There is a limit to them now. They need a follow-up console a couple of years after they've launched one, so that, you know, that's a big trouble. And 3DS again, what where do you go next? It's I think they're in real trouble, and I do think it's gonna. People have been saying this for years, and people get criticised for saying it, but I think they do need to either accept mobile, and not just mobile, all other, the idea of platforms existing in the cloud and not being limited to their own hardware. This whole idea that it's got to be on a Nintendo machine, that only they can design this stuff for their stuff, is just pish. You know, they need to accept that model isn't going to last very long, and they've got to adapt. Otherwise, in a decade, and I mean in a decade's time, you know, a long time, they are going to be Sega, and they are going to be realizing that there isn't an audience there that will buy dedicated Nintendo hardware for dedicated Nintendo games, or at least not enough to make masses of profit that they need to make. And
I've heard 2014 is going to be the year of the Wii U.
Yeah. Well, the year it gets pulled from the shelves, maybe, yeah.
Yeah, I totally haven't heard that. I just said that because that's the kind of thing that people say, isn't it?
It's funny, isn't it? Like, I don't think the 3DS is going anywhere. Like, I think it's a really great system, and actually, it works fantastically as a device for younger people. And I think that's, you know, I think Nintendo works for kids like really, really well.
Apart from the 3D bit, which is obviously.
Well, it's not fantastic, is it? But like,
and clear now that 3D is clearly officially dead because they have pulled it from the consoles aren't doing 3D, the TVs aren't doing 3D. It is, as predicted, a complete fad and completely dead. So the 3DS is now, you know, obsolete in that regard.
Sure,
but the actual thing and the games are very good. Well, like, the games library is great.
Like I say, you don't have to, you know, you don't have to have the 3D slider on, you know. No. But like, you know, and this is why we have the 2DS.
What the 3DS has become is the DS2, which is fair enough, you know, because the DS sold like gangbusters and the 3DS has sold very well too. So you could say, well, what they do next is essentially a slightly more powerful version of the same thing. But that's not in Nintendo's nature. I mean, I bet your money they won't do that, because what they should have done was a Wii 2 that was exactly the same idea and slightly more powerful. And yeah, it might not have sold at the rates that we manage, but it would have sold a hell of a lot better than the Wii U has. And I just don't see them doing it, because they never do. They always think, oh no, let's do something crazy, and it works out for them every now and again. I don't know what they will follow the DS and 3DS little family with. I don't think it will be another two screen handhelds, because they don't like doing that. They like to do something different.
Which is admirable.
It is admirable.
Cool. And when they hit it right, it's great.
And as John used to say on these podcasts, that if they were a Western company, then there's no way that they wouldn't have changed CEO about 20 times by now, because they're kind of just sprawling around in the water, drowning, and again going, no, we're fine. And you can apparently get away with that in Japan. But if they were a US company, he would be gone. You know, it's... Yeah.
Hasn't he volunteered to slash his pay in half?
Slashing his pay because of the Wii U. Yeah, I mean, that makes many a negative headline as well. But
that's what I read.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like what I really want, and I think what would solve a lot of the problems here, and potentially this might end up being what they do. What I really want them to do is make a tablet, because, you know, you can get into mobile at that point, or, you know, like a smaller version of it, and make it a mobile phone as well. You know, it means that you can get around that. You can still sell Nintendo games on Nintendo hardware.
Well, yeah, this is what on our stateside column, Carter from 148 Apps proposed this week. Actually, he's written an interesting feature about how he thinks they shouldn't be making mobile games. They should be making the mobiles for their own games. And that would navigate around the idea of them not wanting to have their games on other people's hardware, and they could do something, you know, that was generally interesting. But, I mean, and then he also goes to point out that a couple of companies have tried this themselves before, namely Nokia and Sony, and both failed dismally. And you could argue that Nintendo's thing would most definitely be a gaming device first and a tablet or phone second, and so that would make it unique. But then you I mean, it's a very complicated business to get into, and it, as he kind of touches on, you've got to form ties with carriers around the world and all the different operators. You've got to find retailers. I mean, it's a whole different ballgame to launching a handheld. It's a completely different retail environment, and it's very difficult to get into. And at the moment, the last thing anyone wants is another Phone OS, because there's too many, and there's more launching every year. And a couple of years ago, they could have got away with it. Yeah, I mean, that is exactly it. There were all that talk about the Facebook phone, and then when HTC finally did one, and albeit it was Android, but it completely tanked because everyone is just kind of used to the 3-stroke 4 we have at the moment. You throw another one in the mix, and then, or you do what Sony did and do the halfway thing where you piggyback on Android, then it just gets too much. And I think the concept of a tablet might work. If they do a phone, I think less so. And again, you've got the same problem in that you'd have to make it incredibly easy to develop for. Otherwise, it literally just would be Nintendo games.
If you wade into the tablet market, you just find yourself butting up against Apple.
And incredibly cheap Android tablets as well. It's a different market.
That's not the same thing. Even if it was called the Nintablet, which obviously it should be called.
Well, I said Mario Mobile. I would buy a Mario Mobile.
But would you though? I mean, like,
Pokephone.
Pokephone. Yeah, outside of Japan, I just don't see.
No,
that
I don't. I know. That's my whole point. Because it's something that often you have to say to developers on iPhone. Yeah, iPhone has a massive library of games, and obviously games are a huge factor in iOS's success. But they are a secondary factor. They're not the reason people buy iPhones. And they buy an iPhone, and then they might download some games, but no one goes to a phone shop and thinks, oh god, that game, you know, Plants vs. Zombies 2 is on that one, it isn't on this one, okay, I'm going to buy that one. They're an afterthought. There's something where people have got a phone, they then go, oh, there's a lot of games on, and all of the platforms have games on now, and they're like, you know, they're not the purchasing factor. If you launch a phone or a tablet that is solely your selling point is it's got Mario on it, you'll get a certain amount of people who buy it. But I mean, that's why I think it might be slightly easier for a tablet, because tablets are leisure devices, you don't have them with you all the time. But if you're talking about your actual phone you've got in your pocket, and it's got some horrible Japanese OS that no one understands on it, that Nintendo will come up with, and it only has Nintendo apps on it, and it doesn't have Twitter, it doesn't have Instagram, it doesn't have, you know, you start to think, no, you're not going to be saddled with that, are you? You're not going to have that as your main phone.
Plus, you'd have a whole bunch of kids buying mobile phones going, what's a Mario?
Exactly. Yeah, that might be a reality very soon.
That is a frightening thought, isn't it?
It is indeed. Well, we'll have to see how serious Nintendo are about all of this. I don't really know, but we couldn't not mention it because it's been noisy as hell. So the Nintablet. There you go.
Yeah, we'll have that.
About this week, Dungeon Keeper has appeared on iPhone and iPad to an uproarious amount of dissent, because it was originally a very popular title back in the 90s on PCs. It was one of them strategy based grow yourself a little goblin fort, I don't know if they were goblins or not, but various, you know, underworldy creatures, and build things and attack things. And unfortunately, I was an Amiga kid, but I didn't have a PC at the time when PCs were around, so I wasn't a big Dungeon Keeper player, I must concede. But it had a very hardcore fan base and still popular in some circles to this day. So when it turned out that EA was going to be bringing it to iOS, everyone went, oh, and it turns out some of those weird noises were justified, because it's come out and people have gone, yuck. Or at least a big chunk of them have. It's been done by EA and Mythic Entertainment. It is free to play. Huge shock there. And instead of playing like the original game does, it plays much more, apparently, like Clash of Clans. So they've turned Dungeon Keeper into another Clash of Clans-like
Hooray!
Game. Because we don't have enough of those.
Yay!
Everything right down to the kind of the art style looks a bit more kind of cartoony and round and Clash of Clanny than it did originally. We've just got a big list of comments going, no, underneath the story, which I can understand for such a popular fan base. But in truth, what did we expect, really?
This is just EA going back through its licenses and going, who can we needle for some money?
Yeah,
and then give the sort of license to Mythic Entertainment and go, here, guys, botch this.
And well, I haven't played it, so I'm not going to say they've botched it, because that would be unfair.
No, sorry, it would be unfair. They did fine with what did they have? Might and Magic, was it? No, was it Might and Magic?
Is that them? I don't know.
They did that one that guy who's now a spaceman made. Ultima.
Garriott.
Yeah, Garriott. They did Ultima Forever. Mythic did Ultima Forever. And it was all right. It was fine. It was good.
Yeah.
But it was a bit free to play, and that's not what you want if you remember that series. And Dungeon Keeper looks like, who remembers Dungeon Keeper?
Well, I remember it. I remember the cover. I very much remember the black cover with the big red beastie on the front. But I only saw it in shops because I didn't have a PC and couldn't play it when I were a young'un. But yes, they're sort of, it's a weird cash in on nostalgia whilst at the same time appealing clearly to Clash of Clans players rather than the old school players who remember and love it. So they're suckering you in with a license and then doing a bit of a bait and switch by giving you modern gameplay that is going to annoy the hardcore and probably confuse the new people going, what's Dungeon Keeper? I've got no idea. So I don't care. Either way, it's out, free iOS, iPad right now. Go and judge for yourself. Also out now, Rocket Robo. Which is available for iOS and Android if you want. It's 69p99, at least on iOS. Probably be a bit more expensive on Android, because it always is. Stupid exchange rates. And what it looks like is, do you remember a while back there was a floaty platformer thing starring a little robot who had a propeller? It was called Unmechanical. It was a PC game originally and then got ported over to iOS. It looks like a very colourful, upbeat, almost Little Big Planet-y version of that. So you are a little floating robot floating through these free-floating 3D worlds in which there are mazes that are floating in space. And you're performing little puzzles and you're unlocking areas and you're changing the orientation of the screen. You're rotating things around, pushing blocks into places and doing general puzzle stuff. It looks very bright and colourful and upbeat. And yeah, out right now. I actually quite like the look of it.
There's a bit with light bulbs. That's nice.
It does look very Little Big Planet in its art style, I have to say. But it's an appealing, colourful, you know, fluffy look, and quite the opposite of Unmechanical, which looked quite sort of Unreal Engine, which always creates those slightly dour... It was a good-looking game, but, you know, dimly lit, dour, Gears of War-y kind of environments. But yeah, it's called Rocket Robo, and you can get that right now if you want. There's a new LEGO Star Wars game. But it's not LEGO Star Wars in the standard platform you're jumping around and hitting things way. It is baby's first shmup.
It's good to get babies into shmups, really. Yeah,
well, otherwise, how are they going to defend themselves against massive caterpillar alien ships?
From above.
I ask you.
Who will defeat the Bido Empire in years to come?
Precisely. I'll talk about this a little bit later because I've played it a very small amount. It's 69p99. I'll fill you in later on. But it's a thing that exists. Also, another thing, John Woo's done a game. If you follow movies in any way, you were confused by this, weren't you, Keith? Because people were talking about it and saying John Woo, and you were like, John Woo?
I got sent a print this morning with his signature on, and I have no idea what the game was or who he is.
I don't know who this man is, exactly. Well, he was a very, very action-oriented director, which we imported from the East. As we do a lot of these directors. But Hard Boiled was the thing he was known for, like coming over originally and doing with Chow Yun-Fat and all that, I think, if I remember correctly. And then he went on and he directed Face Off and he directed the second Mission Impossible movie, which was rubbish.
Do you know what?
What?
John Woo's influence on action cinema cannot be underestimated, and now he's put his own unique flair for action and story to mobile gaming with Bloodstroke, a John Woo game.
It's apparently a violent action thriller in which you play as Mei Li, a bodyguard out to protect her charge at any cost. If you've seen any of the John Woo films, which you should have, like I say, Mission Impossible 2 and all that stuff, it's lots of slow motion, ridiculous over-the-top action. There are doves flying everywhere because there have to be doves in John Woo films for some unknown reason, because it looks good in slow motion. Even when Tom Cruise is banding around with a mullet on a motorbike, you still got to have a dove in the background.
It's disappointing that this isn't the mobile port of Stranglehold, which let's be honest, is the game we all want.
Yes, so we've got a trailer up on the site. You can see it's done in the style that, what's that, the one adult Wii game which went a bit ultra violent, where it's black and white with bits of red in it. And you played a guy who had like a chainsaw. I can't remember what the game was called.
Zombie Yee?
No. It had been done in a black and white art style. It looks kind of hand drawn. It was, it looks exactly like that, basically. It's kind of a top downy. Is it isometric? haven't got to that bit in the trailer. Yeah, it's top-down, isometric, you're running around, you'll be swiping the screen, probably sliding along your knees, firing two guns at the same time, whilst in slow motion. How much John Woo has had to do with this game is questionable, other than some people, they said, can we do a game that looks like your films? And he said, yes. And then he signed
the
picture.
He signed the picture. He signed the picture.
Stop saying picture! You bastard. it's out right now. You can get it for £1.99 or $2.99. Last two things to mention. Trambo is a minimalist platformer. It's so minimal, in fact, that it's just black. With some very like fadey backgrounds. You are Blockman. It's properly retro and lo-fi. A little bit more detail than Thomas Was Alone. It's slightly more than just one pixel. But apparently, there's only two controls, left and right. So you have to use trampolines to get to other areas, and you have to drop off the right ledge at any one time, so you can't jump. So I guess it's really, really pared down. I haven't played it yet, but you can get it. £1.49, $1.99. And finally, Pyro Jump is a game that's out right now on iOS and Android. It's a bit like, is it called They Need to Be Fed or Feed Me? They Do Be, something to do with, I think it's called They Need to Be Fed, the original game, but which was that silhouette platformer with strong backgrounds. But you are a character that sticks to rotating circular devices. And so you jump onto the circle and you stick and it rotates around and you tap the screen and you jump off and you launch yourself onto the next rotating device and you have to navigate whole levels like that. So it's done like that, but it's a charmingly cartoony, upbeat thing with princesses and a papercraft visuals. Actually, it reminds me of the visual style of the Smogo game, Beat Sneak Bandit. It looks like the characters are quite similar looking to that.
You're suggesting a lawsuit of some kind?
No, you're putting words in my mouth there. So, no, absolutely not. It's very smart. It's nicely animated. It's gameplay we've seen before, I guess. But it seems that they've spent some time on it. It looks pretty polished. We'll probably be reviewing it because it's handsome. You can get it right now from App Store and Google Play. I don't know how much it costs. Let's find out how much it costs with the power of clicking. It's free!
Free?
So it's probably going to cost you things in the game.
No, they wouldn't do that.
They would never do that. That is true. All right, then. So it's free forever, Pyro Jump. Hooray.
Come sit upon my throne of games.
It's Friday, and we're all here in the chamber wherein lies the throne of games. We're going to talk about some games quickly, starting with Peter.
Hi, yeah. So I've been playing Defenders and Dragons. It's a video game that is good and also made by Glue.
Sounds well generic. Defenders and Dragons.
Yeah. It does, doesn't it?
And robots?
I was really worried when I started playing this because I've played four games now in a row, I think, by Glue over the last month, and they've all been mediocre to awful, and at least bland. But Defenders and Dragons is really good. It's like a stripped-back MOBA, essentially. It's it's a tug-of-war, a 2D tug-of-war, in which you pick a character, either a knight or an archer or a dwarven warrior or two other things that I'm not going to pay 50 quid for. And
yay, Glue.
Some habits die hard. But it's not too much of a problem because the actual characters that you can use are perfectly fine. You upgrade those characters using coins and gems and all that premium currency stuff, and that's fine. But what you do is it's 2D, so you're running towards the right and defending a crystal on the left. And if the crystal or you are destroyed, then it's game over for that level. And basically, a lot of goons get sent towards you, and you have to like take them out with your bows if you stand far away, or you go up to them and hit and stuff. And all the combat's automatic. And it's basically like, it's sort of, it's about figuring out how enemies are going to attack you and the best strategy for using the character that you have to take out those enemies. And it's really good. Like, I've really thoroughly enjoyed it. It's got a bit of humor to it. It's got a cartoony visual styling to it. And I think that looks really, I think it looks really ace. And it's big flashy. And when you do the landing strike, there's a bit of slow-mo. And I'm a sucker, so I quite like that kind of thing. And at the end of a mission, you get given more money. And then you go and upgrade your things again. You can buy guard towers, which are like permanent additions that will fire elves, will fire bows and arrows and whatever it is, like at goblins that are coming towards your position. And not only this, but you, as you play through the game, you kind of, you can sort of spawn your own creeps, essentially. So you have like, that's a technical creeps. Term, MOBA. So in MOBAs, creeps are basically automatically generated or automatically controlled minor characters that you don't really mind getting killed at all, because they're just sort of like nameless goons, essentially.
Okie dokie.
And they walk towards the baddies, and you can just, you know, you spawn them, and you you build up an army, and you're sort of constantly replenishing it, because obviously they go up against other baddies and they die. And then there's multiplayer to it, which is, as far as I can tell, it's sort of asynchronous, and it's you versus another person. And what I love about it is there's a lot of tactical depth to it. There's a lot you have to kind of think about. You know, if you're a slow-moving knight that sort of deals in melee combat a lot, and you're going up against things that are like huge trolls that are really strong and deal lots of damage, then you have to figure out how you can best take out that troll, when really what you want to be using is an elf, like who's got who's an archer or whatever. It's also got daily challenges where they'll provide you everything that you have and that you would need to complete a level, but the levels are really hard, so you have to use your brain to kind of figure out how you would tactically approach this level to succeed with the limited resources that you have. So you know, it's got that glue stuff where, you know, you can buy a whole bunch of stuff, but it doesn't really affect the game that much. And, like, we give glue such a hard time, usually, because I think it's fair to say they don't put out a lot of very good video games.
Well, the first game that I encountered with them was one of those deer hunting sim things. That's the first game I encountered, and it was just a miserable experience.
Absolutely.
Both from mechanical and moral point of view.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's horrible.
This avoids all of that horrible stuff that glue usually get into, and provides a sort of stripped back. It's almost like a minimalist MOBA, essentially. Mm-hmm. And it really does require a lot more thought than usual. So Defenders and Dragons.
Nice one. All right. Well, I am, as I speak, currently playing with my one hand Lego Star Wars Microfighters, it's called. And I've just died. But don't worry, because the Force will be with me always. Right. So this is essentially, from what I can gather, the guys at Lego have basically sent their D team out to do some kind of scrolly shmup thing with the Lego license, because they're all working away on whatever other Lego game, the official Lego game for the official Lego movie, I suppose. Is it Traveller's Tales? I always get confused. Traveller's Tales.
It's Traveller's Tales. The one.
But everyone always gets these studios mixed up, and I know for a fact that the members of those studios get really pissed off about it, because
yep.
I've talked to them.
They should have named themselves better, shouldn't they?
I know, all this TT nonsense. So... it is a vertically scrolling shmup in which, at least in the first few levels which I've played, you take control of a little ground-based craft trundling along the surface of a deserty Star Wars-like planet. You put your finger on the screen, you drag it all around the place, and that's how you move it. It's one-to-one control. The moment you touch the screen, you start firing. If you double-tap the screen, you launch a special weapon, or there's also a sort of button at the bottom right-hand corner you can press if you really want to. And if you've ever seen any kind of shmup, you know what to expect, because enemies come down in waves and patterns, and they drift from left to right, and they come swirling around and all of that. You shoot them, they explode into little pellets like they always do with Lego, those little floaty disc things, and you go and collect them, and that allows you to buy more weapons and upgrade and all that sort of thing. It moves really quite slowly. Now, granted, I've only played the first few levels, so this is all snap judgment stuff. The look of the actual enemies that you're fighting is kind of strong. They're all 3D modeled, and they look really pretty, and they explode in a very satisfying way, because again, it's Lego, and they sort of explode and then drift as if they're in space. And that looks good, and you go and pick up the floaty discs from the corner, and weirdly, the craft that you're controlling, which is like a ground tank thing, looks like it has about 3 keyframes of animation and looks kind of crap in comparison. Equally, the backgrounds are fairly bland and unimpressive, and the levels seem to go on for quite a long time.
So,
whilst being really boring,
I'm trying to picture this. What kind of shmup? What kind of shmup is it? Is it bullet hell, or is it more something?
No. It's not. It is very like there's not very many enemies on screen at any one time. It's not moving very fast. The bullets are traveling extremely slowly. It's not Ikaruga or something at all. It is quite mellow in comparison. It's skewed young.
So it's more like Xevious.
I haven't played that, but
You haven't played it. It's on every. Oh, do you know what? I've started this podcast angry. I'll end it angry.
Excellent.
Okay. So slow moving. Is there like? Did you say there's air to air and air to ground combat? Or
yeah. There are things crawling along the floor. There are big walking tank things. It's pulled from all the Star Wars lore, and I haven't seen a single recognizable craft in it yet. Actually, they'll look like they've been pulled out their ass by the extended universe, which is now so extended to become distended. It's completely uninteresting and unremarkable in almost every way. It's not broken, but I have very little desire to continue playing at all. It's weird seeing the familiar things that you associate with the Lego brand. It's got those discs, and they look exactly the same as they do in the platform games. They've like they've lifted assets straight from that, but then they're dumped into this completely different genre, completely different context, and it's not. And at least initially, it's not that it's ugly per se, but it's like the bits don't match. The enemies don't look too sharp compared with the backgrounds, which look shabby, and then you've got these bits that seem to be borrowed from the platform games that don't gel with the current thing. The action itself is quite slow and ponderous. The controls work fine and everything, but it's too easy and dull to be interesting to anyone below a very kind of young audience, I suppose. It's not at least awful at the beginning. I said I played it for about 20 minutes. All I can say is fair at this point, but I'm not going to write it off. Check back for the review later. Maybe it turns into an amazing explosion. Maybe it's the best Star Wars game since KOTOR. I don't know, but I kind of doubt it. You get it right now. It's 69p99 if you really want to. Keith.
Hello.
What have you and your back been playing this week?
Me and my back have been playing Monument Valley.
I'm jealous of you and your back.
Which is a game. It's not out yet, is it?
No.
By
this is exclusive.
The trendy guys down at Us Two, who for those who know, made Whale Trail. But Whale Trail was always kind of a bit of a hobby. I got the impression. I mean, Us Two make they're a UI specialist and they make apps for all kinds of people. And kind of they kind of attempt at games, I think, was viewed as a bit of a hobby. But since then, they have set up a dedicated game studio, so they kind of take it more seriously now, it would appear. And this [S2] Mm. [S1] This is the product of that. It's a very kind of it's a very simple puzzler in that the levels are based kind of on the idea of Escher paintings, in that they kind of physically don't make sense. You're kind of viewing isometrically. And the idea is you have a little guy who's wearing a hat, or is it a girl? I think it's meant to be a girl, and she's very little. And you tap on the screen and she walks there, but she only walks where she can walk. If there's obstacles in the way and so forth, she doesn't. So you have to manipulate the levels that she is inhabiting so that she can get from A to B. Essentially, that is the game, and it's.
Gotcha.
Displayed in such a beautiful way. I mean, it just is the most stunning thing you have on your screen. It doesn't look as good as
the screenshots, because I've been wanting to play it since I saw the screenshots, because they do look beautiful.
It looks better. It just kind of, it's so relaxing to watch, and things just kind of float and bob around, and the way the levels kind of move within each other. Yeah, it's beautiful to look at. And your awesome. And your actions. I mean, so far I'm not massively. I think I'm on the fourth world. So I'm not massively into it, but your interactions are kind of reduced down to a couple of things. So there are parts of levels that you can literally move your finger, almost like mm-hmm. levers that then open up other parts of the world or move them directly. And there are ones you can twist. They have little kind of little twisty thing on that you spin and it twists them round. And the idea, I mean, there's no kind of on-screen thing telling you what you can and can't do, so you just kind of experiment and you start to learn, and it just shifts the levels around, sometimes very logically, just spinning around a set of stairs, say, so mm-hmm. that you can walk up them, or sometimes incredibly in that kind of Escher way where just because it looks like it meets up, if you know what I mean, whereas in reality it wouldn't actually meet up. And as you move through, you can actually then start moving the entire level around to view it from different angles, which of course opens up all kinds of other possibilities. And it's one of those games, a bit like a jigsaw, you have to work out which bit you do first that then can open up other parts of the level. So, you know, you do the edge of a jigsaw first and fill in the middle, that kind of idea. And it's hard to qualify in terms of how good it is, because it's a very sedate game. And, you know, it's not going to be Angry Birds. It's not going to make them millions, because most people will start it up and think, oh, this is boring. Because it kind of is, but it's one of those mobile games that you would do instead of doing a crossword, or, you know, you would, instead of a Sudoku, it's a kind of, oh, you know, I've got a little bit of time and I'm want to tease my brain a bit. And
what do they call them? Zen puzzlers.
It relies on its presentation, because the basic concept behind it is Escher paintings, and everyone knows, you know, they're a visual trick. It relies on how good it looks. You know, this wouldn't work if it wasn't presented in this kind of way. And they really do know how to make things look amazing.
I'm glad to hear it looks as good.
It really does. It's
the screenshots had so much promise.
It's beautiful. And it's one of those games that make the quality of the iOS devices' screens these days really shine. Because if this were on an old iPhone, it wouldn't look anywhere near as good, because you need that almost paper quality of the screen for it to really fly. And it does fly. But like I say, I don't know whether if I had a busy week, I would think to go to it. It's one of those games that I can imagine if I was on holiday or, you know, had a bit of spare time, I might think, oh, I'll just, you know, have a few minutes on that. I'll have to get further. But yeah, it certainly doesn't disappoint visually, and the kind of ideas behind the puzzles are very good, and it's getting more complex as I'm going through, as you'd expect, and it isn't disappointing on that front either. They are getting a bit more, oh, what do I do here, rather than just a simple case of, oh, tap that, move that. I mean, it's a little bit pretentious, I guess you could say. There's this weird kind of snowman guy who started appearing in levels, and when you tap on him, he spouts some weird stuff about, I don't know, life or something. I don't know what he exactly is saying. He's obviously meant to be layering some kind of mystery into why I'm walking around this kind of labyrinth. But yeah, I'd found him a bit, well, they are from Shoreditch, so it's a bit like that.
They're around the corner from me, actually, when I lived in London. But they were in the good bit. I was in the horrible bit on the edge of Hackney.
Well, that's what makes it good, isn't it, being so close to the not good bits. But yes, so it's very hard to say. But when it comes out, it will certainly, it's worth, I mean, I don't know what kind of pricing structure it has. I assume it's paid, because there's no, doesn't seem to be any in
it. Well, they had a nightmare with Whale Trail about making it premium, then freemium, then I reckon it's going to be premium. It's got to be.
Yeah, I would have thought so. I love the look of Whale Trail, but this is on a different scale in terms of looks. And you can tell that, I mean, it is a kind of almost an interactive UI game. You are just kind of interfacing, if you know what I mean. And given that's what they do, they understand
docking
psychology. Yeah, that's a whole different thing. They understand the psychology of how people use touch screens and so forth, that it really comes across in this, that they kind of get it. And there's no overt signposting, turn this, or, you know, it just kind of drops you in there and lets you stroke the screen until you find something that moves, essentially. Yeah, I'm impressed so far.
Cool. All right, well, we'll definitely follow that up, because I'm looking forward to playing that, and we'll keep you informed when the release comes out. It's Monument Valley, that's the title, isn't it?
Yes. Sounds like Zone in Alton Towers to me.
Yeah. It does, actually, yeah, you're right. Or like a level on the Crystal Maze. Well, thank you for listening thus far. And send us your opinions on the new Ninja Turtle poster. Oh. It's not Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle anymore.
There's Hero Turtles over here, then.
That's what they had to do with the cartoon.
I'm going to have to go and be physically violent towards somebody to get my anger out.
A turtle.
Or maybe a turtle.
Go kick a turtle. Don't kick a turtle, by the way, obviously, because it's not very sporting, because it's not like they can get away. And they're kind of cute. But not these turtles. They look rubbish. So go and get cross turtles this week, and play some games while you're at it. Maybe some of the ones we talked about. And join us next time for more mobile chatter. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye. I love you.